Welcome back to another episode of the Crime and Coffee Couple. I am Mike.
And I am Allison.
Yeah, I like you're getting a little bit more gusto every episode.
Woo!
Yeah, you feel some gusto?
Feel it.
Good. You look gustavus.
Feel it in my fingers.
I feel it in my toes. That's from what movie?
Love Actually.
Love Actually. It's a holiday hit here, the Mike and Allison household.
Yes, it is.
Allison and Mike, as you were. But yeah, hey, thanks for listening. We just set up a Patreon. Did you know that? Yeah.
I did know that. You told me.
Yeah, a couple people asked, hey, do you guys have a Patreon? So it's set up. Go look at the show notes and check us out. And I think we have like 3 levels, $5, $10, $25, depends how much money you got. And you really get nothing in bonus besides just knowing that you're helping us out to pay for our regular fees.
Eventually, we would like to get there.
Yeah, we just don't want to promise something and not deliver it. So
yeah.
If you really love us, then we'd appreciate whatever you can throw our way to help host this podcast and stuff. But
yep.
Also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Crime and Coffee number 2. Crime and Coffee 2. And I think that's about all the things I can bring up, right?
Yeah, I think we're good.
Okay.
We covered the housekeeping bits.
Yeah, housekeeping bits. So, hey, thanks. And we're growing. Keep on growing. So, hey, you people like stuff. Hopefully, we're bringing some interesting stories. You're learning some things and, yeah, maybe helping people also along the way.
Hopefully.
Yeah, that's the idea. So this week, I'm going.
And I'm relaxed.
Yeah, we take turns. Do you get like stressed the weeks that you have to go?
No, not really.
I do like right before the show starts. I'm like, okay, I better have my stuff together.
I usually feel pretty prepared. I'm only stressed if I feel like I'm not confident.
Yeah.
But seeing as I'm a psychopath, I prepare and over-prepare. And
you yell at me to make sure that I'm prepared. Not yelling, more so nagging, I would say.
Nagging.
Yeah, be like, Mike, we only have 3 more days until we're recording.
Well, because I know we're recording and I don't see a laptop on your lap.
When's the last time I let you down on this show?
You haven't.
Okay, not yet. And I probably will at some point. Let's be honest.
That's not going to go over well.
No,
don't do it. I'm warning you.
But so far, so good. So, I mean, this one.
You know what's good for you.
I noticed you almost didn't say anything yesterday. I don't think you even
did. I did not say anything
yesterday.
Okay, but
today you did, though.
No, I didn't. I said, so we're going on a podcast? Yeah, okay. That was a confirmation.
Okay, okay.
So, and the reason why we're confirming is because we're doing this on a day that is not typical for us.
Right.
We're Sunday morning recorders, but sometimes, you know.
Depending on things coming up.
Our schedule might be out of whack. And
yeah, we want to, if we say we're going to come out with something every Sunday, we're going to say we're going to do it. Now, that's good that you're in charge of that, because if it was me, it'd be like, well, maybe Tuesday we could do something or Monday.
And so. Like, no, we're doing it Sunday.
Yeah, you're like a drill sergeant.
I am.
Yeah, well, you need one of us. Kind of, we fill each other's gaps.
That's
basically.
For sure.
You know, like you've got gaps here, I've got those. And
you're the yin to my yang.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and we're on YouTube also. I think we got a new camera. It worked pretty good last week. I noticed there was a timestamp in the upper left-hand corner the entire time. So
okay.
I think I shut it off this time. If not, maybe next week, right?
Hey, you know, we're learning as we go.
Yeah, exactly. Who cares? So as long as we deliver the right stories with the right details, that's all that matters.
Exactly.
Yeah. How's your week looking?
You know, typical, working, all that jazz.
You're working.
All that jazz.
Yeah, I do. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, what about you?
I'm just really excited. I'm almost done with my Netflix show, Friday Night Lights. It's a little like high school football show. I'm just obsessed with it. Like whenever you go to sleep at night, I turn it on Netflix and don't go to sleep till like 11:30 midnight. So
at like 6:30, Mike's like, Allison, you ready for bed yet? I'm like, Mike, it's 6:30. No.
Babe, I'll light you a candle. I'll get your like lotions ready.
I got your pillows fluffed. You're ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, I'm almost done. Got last season 5. So I've been trucking through it.
Sweet.
Yeah. It's been pretty good.
I've been reading a lot.
Yeah. That's okay.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
We got 2 new lounge chairs for our pool area.
Oh,
and
you love that.
Me and Reese call it our island oasis. And I've just,
it's kind of
guided me into reading more. I've always been a reader, but more so I read at night to go to sleep.
Would you say like a book a week?
Now, at this point in time, I would say, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of reading us out of house and home. Those books can get expensive.
I know, but
Kindles,
I love them.
If I see like a $15.99, I'm like, what the hell? Like,
Sometimes I just can't resist.
Well, I think authors deserve the money, but the thing is, like, is this digital book, like, you know, I'm used to paying for a hardcover $15.99 or something, but a digital version that's like, you know, doesn't take any printing, like, at least give me a discount.
Well, what's weird to me is that the soft covered book will be less expensive than the Kindle. I'm like, how is that possible
that
to bind it, print it, and ship it, you're going to charge less than an electronic version? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Right, like a worse carbon footprint and everything.
Yeah,
and
maybe I'm missing something, but
no, you're not. Amazon's not missing anything because they're making all the money on it.
Yeah, so anyway, but I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
Hey, that's all. My number one thing in life is to make you happy.
Well, thanks, Mike.
And I mean, it happens like 70% of the time, so.
That you make me happy?
Yeah.
good.
So yes, that's pretty good hit. I mean, if I was hitting 70% in the Major League Baseball, that'd be pretty good average.
Mm-hmm.
So 750, I mean, that's not bad.
Not bad.
So you ready to get into the story this week?
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, this week is the story of the Fort Worth missing trio.
Oh, I don't think I've heard this.
Okay. So I tend to look into more like mysteries and kind of things, because I don't like getting into the deep, dark things like you do sometimes, but I'll listen to you all day long, sweetheart. I promise I will. So this one took place in Fort Worth.
Like you mentioned.
Imagine
yes,
that.
Imagine that.
Yeah, imagine
I
that.
I thought you were going to say New Jersey.
No, I wanted to throw a curveball. So it is definitely Fort Worth. On the morning of December 23rd, 1974.
Right around Christmas.
Yep, a couple days before Christmas. Lisa Renee Wilson, 14 years old. Julie Ann Mosley, 9 years old, and Mary Rachel Trelisa. I'm going to need your help with this last name, Trelisa.
Trelisa?
It's spelled T-R-L-I-C-A.
Okay, Trelisa.
But it's Trelisa. So she's age 17.
Okay.
They travel to the Seminary South Shopping Center in Fort Worth, Texas. Get some Christmas shopping done last minute. Something you would never do because you'd be done by now.
Oh, I'd be done by close to Thanksgiving.
Yep.
Can you tell me their ages again?
Sure. So the oldest is 17. Her name's Mary Rachel Trelisa. The next in line is Lisa Renee Wilson at 14.
Okay.
And Julianne Mosley is 9.
Okay, 9. So big age differences. And how are they related?
I'll tell you in a second.
Okay.
Yeah,
here I go with my questions.
Yeah, I mean, if you could let me tell the story, I think that'd be good.
Zip it.
Yeah, zippy.
It's zipped.
Zip-a-doo. Okay, so they go Christmas shopping. Lisa and Mary both go by their middle names. To make it a little more
extra confusing.
Yeah. So there's names in here, but I'll remind you. So it's Renee, Julie, and Rachel.
Renee, Julie, and Rachel. Of course, yep. Today is the day I forego my pad of paper.
You're going to be good. The one, I mean, really, I talk about all of them the same.
Okay.
So it's fine. Renee and Rachel were friends, and Julie was the sister of Renee's boyfriend, Terry Mosley.
Okay. So that's why she was tagging along.
Yep. They're tagging along.
That was
the
nice.
One's tagging along.
Yep. To bring the little one.
Yeah. So Rachel and Renee had initially planned to go shopping with Terry, you know, Renee's boyfriend.
Sure.
But he'd made plans to visit a friend in the hospital. So Julie wanted to go along with them, but was told that she needed permission from her mother, Rayanne.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So she was able to get her permission after complaining, be like, Mom, please, I just want to go. Please, please, please. And, you know, about having no one to play with at home. Just like, I have no one to play with. Can I please go with the girls?
Well, and then it's fun to go with the older girls.
Absolutely.
You feel cool.
Right. Exactly. So she was told, yeah, you can go, but you got to be home by 6 p.m. Right now, that wasn't a problem at all because Renee was supposed to go to a Christmas party that night with Terry, and she wanted to be home by 4 o'clock because they're supposed to be there, I think, by 6.
And she wanted to get ready,
yeah,
primp herself up.
Yep, so plenty of time.
And I'm sure the mom trusted the girlfriend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm sure that wasn't the concern.
Nope. So they got out around noon. They were going to shopping around noon. The girls got in the car, went to the Army Navy surplus store to get some jeans that Renee had on layaway. So after they drove to the shopping center, they parked Rachel's 1974 Oldsmobile 98 in the upper parking level near the Sears outlet.
Oh, so it was a new car.
Yes. Yeah. Relatively speaking, absolutely.
Well, didn't
it was. Yeah, 74.
Yeah, yep. Place in 74.
And it was called an Oldsmobile 98, so maybe it was like super futuristic.
Huh.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, it wasn't super futuristic. But witnesses would later inform police they'd seen the girls inside the mall throughout the afternoon, and it's their belief they returned to the car at some point to drop off whatever they had purchased. What happened after is where the mystery begins.
Oh, boy.
So buckle up. So that night, the girls did not return home. Obviously, their family started to worry about them.
Of course.
And they drove right over to the shopping center where they thought they were shopping to search for them. Terry was charged with staying by the phone at home just in case they called or they turned up or whatever it was.
Right, right.
In case somebody called about where they were. Rachel's Oldsmobile was discovered in the parking lot at about 6 p.m. It was locked, and there was one present in the backseat floorboard.
And it was at the mall.
Yep. So there was no sign of the girls or signs of a struggle or anything like that in the vehicle at all. So the families waited at the mall all night and kind of staked it out, like kind of far away, just to see if anybody would come back for the car or whatever it might be. Just kind of, they think something's crazy, like something's weird here.
Now, are police getting involved at this point?
Not yet.
Security at the mall?
Yeah, I'll tell you in a second.
Okay. I was supposed to zip it and I didn't.
No, you're good. Keep on asking. You're asking what everybody's wondering. So come at me, bro. All right. So they're kind of staking it out. Wanted to see maybe the girls are sneaking back or whatever hijinks are happening here. So Renee's mother, Judy Wilson, had them paged at every single store. So she went in, paged them at every single store. Nothing didn't turn up. And they called the local hospitals and the police. while Rusty Arnold and his mother went from store to store looking for them. Richard Wilson, and a neighbor climbed into the roof of a nearby building with a shotgun and stood watch over the Oldsmobile.
Okay, so they have a bird's eye view of the car.
Yep, and ready to shoot somebody.
With a shotgun.
Well, they figured that the girls were taken.
Okay, so already their minds have gone to a very bad place.
Right, absolutely. Okay. I mean, this isn't like these girls. And
sure.
Yeah, they think they had to be abducted somehow.
Wow, so he himself is getting a shotgun rather than getting the police involved?
The police are looking, and
father was up there with a shotgun?
I don't know. I mean, it's Texas, so everybody's kind of got a gun, I guess. I don't think it's...
That just seems kind of like, wow.
Yeah, I don't think they were like, yeah, keep watching, shoot the person. I'm sure they didn't tell them about it. I don't know. But each of the girls' friends were called. Obviously, you're going to call the different friends. So you're like, hey, have you talked to the girls at all? All of them said they heard nothing.
Oh, it's like a worst nightmare.
Yep. And with the police informed, the case was handed over to the Youth Division of the Fort Worth Police Department's Missing Persons Bureau.
Okay.
All right. So police initially believe the three ran away. So they're thinking it's a runaway case.
Without the car?
Right. That's
maybe hitchhiking was a thing back then.
Or maybe that was their plan. Yeah, just leave the car and go take off. Like, have a friend pick you up. I don't know. But their families just said they couldn't see that happening. But because the disappearance was labeled as a possible runaway, the case wasn't investigated as thoroughly as it should have.
No, why? Why do they do that?
I don't know.
It'd be like if, Reese and her friends, like, oh, they probably ran away. It's like, no, they did not run away.
Like, in the off chance that they didn't, how about we treat it like a real case?
Let's just pursue it. Full steam.
I mean, we're not going to say, oh, I wish we would have done less.
Right?
Yeah, you're never... Never going to say, police, no. I wish you would have done
that
less.
That makes me crazy.
Now, of course, police have limited resources, so they want to make sure they have the right. But, I mean,
yeah, but there's three girls.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Absolutely. So, it wasn't investigated as thoroughly as it should have been for the first year,
The first year?
Yeah. So, I'm going to tell you some things that, happened during that first year, for sure. But this meant Mary's car wasn't processed for evidence, and they didn't dust for fingerprints.
What?
So
you're saying that because it could have potentially been a runaway, they just didn't touch the car?
Right. I'm wondering if they're like, you know what? Nah, they'll turn up.
That's the only piece we had. They're gone.
Right.
The only thing we have is the car and the present in the car.
Yeah. If we had more evidence, I get that. But maybe, actually, I don't even get that. Like, what's it going to hurt to fingerprint the car?
No, you friggin' fingerprint the car.
That's an afternoon of some dusting, right?
Yeah. I'll do it for you. I will volunteer and I will dust it.
Yeah.
Just show me how to do it.
Put me in a class.
It takes a few hours
and we'll get it.
Obviously, at this point in time, there was no CCTV footage at the mall.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, 1974 was kind of far back. The runaway theory gained some steam after Rachel's husband, Thomas, received a letter in the mail.
Oh.
The morning of December 24th, Christmas Eve. Okay,
so just the following day.
Yep. It was in the mailbox and addressed to Thomas from Rachel.
Okay.
Here's what it said. I know I'm going to catch it, but we just had to get away. We're going to Houston. See you in about a week. The car is in Sears upper lot. Love, Rachel.
Mm.
Okay, so the letter was written on a sheet of paper that was a little wider than the envelope, so not something made for the envelope or anything. Mm-hmm. And the writing was, like, they called it childish scrawl. Rachel, she was like 17, but they said, it could have still been her handwriting.
Because obviously they probably could have walked over to her backpack and gotten a piece of paper that she had written on and compared it and had handwriting analysis done.
Yeah, for sure. And they did do handwriting analysis. Turned up inconclusive.
Oh.
Which I don't get how it could be inconclusive.
Unless she wrote it in haste.
Right. There's thinking maybe somebody made her do it.
Was shaky, so it wasn't exact.
Yep. And the stamp on the envelope was canceled that same morning it arrived. So it was sent the day of their abduction.
Wow.
Yeah. Unless somebody was doing something screwy at the post office or whatever it was. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? I canceled the stamp. Like, it was stamped like, hey, you can't use the stamp anymore because
processed. It's processed.
Yeah. So, and then they got to look and see, where was it sent from?
Right.
So.
And is there DNA evidence on the envelope, hence somebody licking it?
Right. Right. That'd be the ideal situation there. But I don't think they had that in 1974. Yeah.
I don't know when that started to happen.
Yep. So, there was one zip code. It was 76083 from what they identified. But the three was printed backwards. So they thought that maybe the last two numbers meant that it was hand loaded on a stamp. So I guess, like, at that time when they canceled things, they'd like hand load it with, the numbers and be like,
Okay.
That's, I don't know. And if that was the case, then, you know, there's only a couple places that hand stamp and have those numbers in them. And it was Eliasville or Throckmorton, Texas.
Okay.
Sorry if I'm saying those wrong.
How far is that from Fort Worth?
Near, I'm somewhat nearby.
So a nearby town.
Yeah. Possible, like anywhere nearby that could possibly send it and like still get there in the same day.
Right.
However, others feel the final two numbers were meant to read 88, meaning it was postmarked in Weatherford, Texas.
Okay.
Also somewhat nearby. So, both Rachel's mother and Thomas believe the letter wasn't written by her.
Okay. And a parent is very familiar with what their kid's writing looks like.
Now, it wasn't necessarily because of the writing. So they said the writing looked pretty close.
The content?
Yeah. Yeah. It just seemed like, also, I'm going to tell you a little thing here. Rachel affectionately called her husband Tommy, and the letter was addressed to Thomas A. Trelisa,
which she wouldn't have written it so formally.
Right.
Like, I've never called you Michael.
Right. It'd be like to Michael L. Pernecki.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, she calls me Mike.
No, she would never call me that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which, you know, maybe she's just formally being like, we're gone now, but that's just really weird.
It's very out of character.
But also,
the whole thing's out of character.
Also, if you're abducting people, wouldn't you just be like, what do you call him? And then write it down there instead of Thomas A. Trelisa?
There's a lot of very stupid criminals.
Yeah. I mean, I guess.
And maybe she wrote his name differently to try to send up the alarm bells.
Yes, I agree.
And, you know, she could have just lied and be like, I call him Thomas.
Right. Yeah.
Hmm. You know, a little clue.
Oh, I was thinking the opposite, that she was really running away and she wanted to make it look like somebody was abducting them.
Wouldn't you find it greatly weird if you received a letter from me and I called you Michael?
Yeah, for sure.
So that could be my way of saying something's wrong.
And I'd like to think that I'd know for sure if it was your handwriting. I mean, I know your handwriting very well.
Right. I know yours very well, too.
Yeah. So I'd be like, well, that's her handwriting. But, you know, you can't say if they're forced to do it or not.
No.
Yeah, obviously.
We wrote each other a lot of notes during high school.
We did. A lot of racy notes.
I actually have the... No, we did not. We were very innocent racy. And sweet. Yeah. I actually have them all in a shoebox.
Cute.
Super cute.
Yeah. So, like I said, experts looked at the handwriting and they proved inconclusive. At first, they thought, yep, that's her. Then it said inconclusive. Like, this whole like police work just generally seems like, yeah, it was kind of screwy all over the place.
Now, can I ask you, going back to the car, what happened to the car? Did it just go back into their possession and then the family started using it and then the fingerprints were just destroyed?
That's a great question. I don't know.
And the evidence that could have been there is destroyed.
I think it's probably they went to use it. I don't know for sure, but I think the family used it.
Because obviously they didn't just keep it in the parking lot of the mall like a shrine.
Right. No, it's gone. I don't know anything about it.
My question was it something they could go back and check?
Doesn't seem like it because they never mentioned that. Yeah. So the experts looked at the handwriting, inconclusive, and they're still unsure of the writer's identity or whether it was Rachel at all. It was initially believed, like we said, Rachel was forced to write the letter. But, you know, they've changed it and think that, oh, one thing, that the original loop in the L of Rachel appeared to be like a lowercase e. And then someone went back and changed it, like a spelling error. So.
But everyone would know Rachel. Ends
yeah, instead
with
of
an
Rachie.
L. Yeah, no.
Yeah, I don't know. Or maybe they're just like trying to get her like writing down and they're like, oh, accidentally two e's.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. So there was just some things up in the air. I'm like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like she would. The letter remains the only piece of physical evidence investigators have in this case.
Wow. So they had a full-blown car to look at, but all we have right now is a letter.
Yep. And when DNA technology was developed, like you said, you asked about, it was sent for testing, but no match was found to anyone in the police database nor the girls.
Okay. So maybe it was somebody that didn't commit a crime.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and which is like most people, you know, I would guess.
But when you're going to go into a mall and take three children, you're likely going to have other offenses on record.
Right, you would think.
It's usually not a one-time thing.
Yep. At the time of the girl's disappearance, Rachel's sister, Deborah, was living with her and Thomas. All right. Thomas and Deborah had previously been engaged.
Oh.
So.
Wow, they were very rock solid and confident.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't want somebody that you had previously been engaged to living with us.
Yeah, and if you remember, Rachel's 17.
So she's married?
22 is Thomas.
Okay, because when you said the husband and she called her husband, I'm like, I didn't want to question you, but I was like,
yeah,
wow, that's young. But I guess back in 74, my grandma got married when she was 15.
Well, that was like 1920. So 74 to like 1935.
Yeah, I guess.
Or 1940,
but
whatever your grandma is. But
had she graduated high school?
I don't know.
Okay, because sometimes it's like boom, graduate high school, I'm married.
Or if you drop out at 16, then it's like, well, I know I want to marry you.
Yeah. So,
yeah. I don't know what the situation
was. But that is very, very young.
But definitely a weird situation. So.
And then this other woman lived with them?
Yes.
So it was
Rachel's sister.
Oh, Rachel's sister.
Yeah. So this dude was engaged to Deborah. And then he, you know, they split up and then he went, got with the chick's sister.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
twisted.
Makes an interesting Thanksgiving table.
And they're all living together.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting, right? So they stated it wasn't uncomfortable having the three of them living under the same roof.
Like,
I don't believe you.
Question that. Like,
I don't believe you.
I don't believe you.
No, I don't. Some people in the Mosley, Wilson, and Arnold families believe that Deborah knows more about the disappearances than she's letting on.
Well, let's hope not, because that's a sister.
Yeah, the sister of Rachel.
Yeah.
They sent her a letter after an interview with her that was published in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram in 2000. In it, they asked her to divulge any information she might have and to fully cooperate with the Fort Worth Police Department and the FBI investigators. They also asked her to take a polygraph test.
Okay.
So there was people that were like, you know something about this.
So what made them think she knew something about it?
Because
really, I mean, if they simply went off to the mall and ran away or some guy or whoever took them, how would she know anything about
it? Maybe this
it?
Love connection. I mean, they're obviously
just,
there
just
had to be
obvious reasons yeah. they're suspecting.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, well, I mean, it was your sister. Obviously, you're jealous of her who she's married to your ex-fiancé.
But did they get vibes off of her that made them suspicious that she knew more than she was leading on?
Yeah, it seems like it.
Because you can't just look at the circumstances and be like, you know more.
Right. I think they're also so desperate because there was really no leads.
But yet they let the car go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't have DNA evidence at the time. I don't know. It's fingerprints. I don't know. But Deborah insists she knows nothing about their disappearance. She told the Star Telegram in 2000, I know Rusty blames me. I know he thinks I had something to do with it. Rusty thinks this letter that Tommy got the next day, he thinks I wrote it. So he thinks the sister wrote it. Which is possible. I mean, you'd probably, I mean, if you're so close to your sister and living with her, you'd know her writing, you know, very well.
Why would she involve two other people that have nothing to do with it?
That's a thing that I think throws everything out.
I mean, when you live with somebody, you could slip some poison into their coffee. Why would you go out to a mall and involve two other girls?
No reason to. So she said, I didn't write this letter. I don't know who did. I don't know what happened to my sister. Maybe white slavery.
Oh.
That kind of came out of nowhere. I was like, maybe white slavery. Ooh. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. I have nothing to hide. So, I mean, first of all, let's talk about white slavery. I mean, that slavery can happen no matter what color you are.
Well,
but I think she meant like human trafficking.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know.
What I'm guessing. I don't know what she meant by white slavery.
I didn't even know what trafficking was like 10 years ago.
Yeah. I didn't either.
Maybe 15 or whatever.
Maybe
it's like,
five.
What? That happens?
Honestly, maybe 5 years ago for me.
Maybe.
For me. I don't, you know, that was kind of new to me. I mean, you know, you live in this like naive world where it's like,
yeah,
people wouldn't do that. And like, no, absolutely they do.
Yeah.
So who knows? But anyway, she says she didn't do it. Okay. So the three families distributed missing person flyers across Texas and contacted newspapers all over the country to spread awareness about the disappearances, you know, putting pictures wherever they could in newspapers. And, you know, it gained some traction because it's just like three, you know, young girls have their whole life ahead of them and no leads, like none.
And what's crazy is, you know, December 23rd, that mall was hopping.
Yeah.
So nobody saw them being taken or brought through the parking lot. Nobody saw that.
That's kind of the thing. It's like, it's unbelievable.
Like how?
Like anything about anything, nothing. But everybody's so busy too.
Unless it was somebody they knew and they just calmly walked.
Right.
And then, you know, maybe you wouldn't be suspicious of that.
Yep. Well, here's one thing. A store clerk came forward saying a woman had approached her to say she'd witnessed Renee, Rachel, and Julie being forced into a yellow pickup truck parked by the Buddy's grocery store at the mall on the day that they disappeared.
Okay.
So they're like, okay, well, let's find this lady and find out what she saw. And this was also similar to a 1981 report from another witness who said she'd seen an unidentified male force a girl or girls into a van in the mall's parking lot.
But not a yellow pickup truck.
No. Which, I mean, you can kind of confuse them, I guess.
Yeah, but yellow would be
pretty
obvious.
Damning. Yeah, right. When he'd approached the group, the man had told him it was a family dispute and stay out of it.
Mm.
It's like, okay, fine. Both stories have not been verified by police, and investigators were never able to locate the woman who's spoken to the cashier.
Oh.
So that woman that said she saw a thing, they couldn't find her anywhere. Yeah. Like, they basically put up things like, hey, please say something.
Sure. Obviously, it was posted to the news. If you are this person, please come forward. We need any information from anybody that saw something that they don't even think was important. Just come to us and tell us.
Yeah. This is huge news in Fort Worth. Basically, everybody in Fort Worth knew about this.
Yeah. And I'm sure they had, like, billboards up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All over. Even to this day. So, investigators interviewed a night watchman who was working at Alcon Laboratories just down the street from the Seminary South Shopping Center on the same night of the disappearances. And he saw a car containing three women and two men pulling into the building's driveway that night. Unfortunately, nothing came out of that lead either. Mm. So, it's like time and time again that there's like, well, I might have saw something. And then they're like, nope, nothing. It's like, it's kind of unbelievable. I don't know who to blame in the situation, but it's just a lot of like broken leads
and a series of unfortunate events that like nobody had concrete information.
Yep. Another dude at a local bus depot, a ticket agent, said three girls asked about trips to Houston and other destinations. I mean, that seems like a pretty good lead right there. The morning after Renee, Rachel, and Julie disappeared, but they said that information was unreliable.
Okay.
So I don't know. It's just like one thing after another. It's like you would think this day and age, obviously something like this happened, you'd have like the credit card things and, you know, obviously pings of their cell phones and
but
videos.
That nobody saw something suspicious in the parking lot, because clearly they left in some sort of vehicle.
Right. Right.
You know, but nobody happened to be there at the moment to see.
Yeah. So at this point, they're like super desperate. They're mm-hmm. just like, we got to figure something out. Let's try anything we can. So they go after the few weeks after the disappearances, the families hired a well-known psychic
named
Jay Joseph. Now, I'm not a believer of this like psychic stuff, but I'm like, I mean, if I'm getting in nowhere, like just try something.
You're open to it.
Yeah. Even if they come up with some bullshit and it happens to be right, then okay, great. We got onto something. Like, it, you know, if somebody believes enough about this person, then we can go search the areas they're saying.
Right.
You know, at this point, they're up for anything. So he offered his services free of charge, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And he donated money to a reward fund to help find the girls.
Oh, that's nice.
So he wasn't in it for the money.
Right.
Which is cool. He told them he had a sense something was wrong with the letter supposedly sent by Rachel. And he had a feeling that the trio had gone north toward Oklahoma or Illinois.
Okay.
And I don't know if I put it in here or not, but there's other psychics that also said similar things. Like 60% of the psychics they talked to said they went like north.
Okay.
So that's weird. He also said they were being held against their will and that dope is possibly involved.
Dope.
Now,
crack
dope
is whack.
Yeah. Dope could be weed or heroin.
I don't know back then what they considered to be dope. Was it just any kind of drug they just called dope?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
You don't hear, we don't use that enough.
No, we don't.
Hey, babe, you want to smoke some dope?
Or like the kids come home acting weird. Are you on dope?
Tell me there's not dope in your backpack. Tell me there's not dope.
Dope.
Oh boy. So anyway, sorry to laugh, but
this story is obviously not funny. It's
but the word
dope.
It's the dope. So just please, people, if you're listening, don't try dope.
Dope is bad.
Dope is whack.
It can ruin your life.
Yeah, it really can. So while at the Arnold home, he said something like, if they ever saw him again, that it was a sign, or if they never saw him again, it was a sign the girls were deceased.
Oh, no.
The psychic. And they never spoke to him or saw him again.
Oh, no. I mean, who knows if that's accurate, but I don't like it anyway.
Yeah, you don't want to hear that from a psychic as he's leaving yet. It's like, well, then I'll talk to you next week.
Please, we'll talk again.
Yeah.
No, he's not coming back.
I mean, maybe that was his way of like eventually getting paid or something. I don't know.
I don't think you would do that. I would hope you would not do that to a grief-stricken family.
Right, right. So in 1975, a man claiming to be an acquaintance of Rachel's came forward to say he'd seen the three girls at a record store in the mall a few hours before they went missing.
Well, that's just the thing. There had to have been plenty of people that saw them at the mall.
Right. There was. And there was people, you know, I don't know if I go over this, but there was people in the stores that say, yeah, I kind of remember a girl. You know, one of them even said the type of t-shirt one of them was wearing. And they were like, yeah, that was
and
one.
And that fit the description.
Yeah. So they were definitely in the mall.
Okay.
No doubt about it.
Okay. So this guy's coming to the police a year after the fact.
Yes. And who knows how many months later. I mean, it was just
it was a December. It could have been February.
It could have been a few months. Yeah, who knows. But he saw the girls at the record store in the mall. He noticed another individual with the group, and he and Mary had spoken briefly.
Okay.
So really, they couldn't find anything else after that. He's like, just some dude? And I just saw somebody. That's all I remember. That same year, women's clothes were found in Justin, Texas.
Okay.
Some raggedy clothes somewhere. Initially, they thought they might belong to one of the missing girls, but eventually they weren't related.
That was just ruled out.
Yep. Then 6 weeks after that, this is actually a big piece. 6 weeks after that, the 6 weeks after the girls disappeared at about 11 p.m. on the night of February 6th, Mrs. J.W. Mosley, mother of Julie, received a telephone call. The caller was a girl.
Okay.
Mrs. Mosley later told the Star-Telegram that she believed that the girl was her daughter.
Really?
Yeah. So here's how the call went, or here's what she said about it. "I'd be willing to swear it was her," Mrs. Mosley said. She said that when she answered the telephone, no one spoke to her at first, in spite of the fact that she said hello several times. So she's like, hello, hello, hello. She's like, you know when you like hear somebody there, but there's like...
Yeah, and obviously she's on pins and needles for every time the phone rings that it could potentially be her daughter.
Or information leading to their daughter, yes. Whatever it might be, you know, just anything. And then Mrs. Mosley started to hang up, and she heard a low moan and a girl say, "Mama."
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I asked, "Who is this?" And Julie said, "Mama," again.
Oh my gosh. Mrs. Mosley said.
Mrs. Mosley by then was positive she was being with her daughter. You know, like you would know.
Yes. Well, you know the tone of your child's voice.
Even a moan, even like a...
You know it.
Because if they're in pain or whatever it is.
You've
like,
raised them.
Yeah, like without a doubt, like I know you would. Like yeah, you would 100%.
100,000% sure.
Me, you know, maybe not so much, but I'd like to think so.
But sometimes it could happen so fast.
Yeah. So Mrs. Mosley by then, again, was positive she's speaking with her daughter. And she asked the caller, "Is this Julie Mosley?" And the caller replied, "Yes."
Ugh.
So she goes, "Listen, if this is someone playing a joke, please stop. I can't take anymore," Mrs. Mosley told the caller. She said then she asked the caller where she was, and the girl said she did not know. Julie said "Mama" once more and just started to say something else when the phone was hung up. Mrs. Mosley said.
So then you got to wonder, was she being held somewhere and got free and long enough to make this call?
Right.
Because why would the captor let her call?
Well, I picture the captor like holding her like down or something, or just trying to prove that she's still alive
but
or something.
But why?
I don't know. Maybe play
just
games.
Just to torture the family?
That's what I'm thinking. No other reason. Because, I mean, otherwise she'd be like, yeah, I'm here. I don't know where I am. Like, you know.
Right. If she had that moment.
Yeah, exactly.
To freely speak.
Or maybe she was like doped up on something. You know, some kind of drugs of some sort. You know, who knows?
Who knows?
Yep. And she said, "I know there's a possibility someone's putting me on, but I'm positive that was Julie on the phone. At least I now know she is alive and that helps. But where is she?" She said the girl wasn't speaking normally and she sounded either drugged or sick.
It's very possible she was one of or both.
Or yeah, maybe fed tons of alcohol and just like, you know, who knows? Yeah, could be anything. So the families hired Private Dick John Swaim in 1975.
Do we have to say Private Dick?
I have it once more in this this document. Gosh. So I think I'm not going to say Private Investigator anymore.
Because, you know, we can say PI.
But I have the opportunity to say Private Dick.
Then go for it.
So they hired Private Dick John Swaim in 1975 because they were frustrated with how the police were handling the investigation thus far, obviously.
Okay.
I mean, they feel like they are kind of dicking around for about a year.
Well, and just saying, we assume they've run away.
Right. So,
like, right there, it's like, no.
Right. So this guy kind of got his crap together. He called a bunch of press conferences and forced the investigators to allow him to access the case files. So, I mean, they know somebody's actively working on this now.
Which gives them that peace of mind, at least, that something's being done.
Yep. And in April 1975, Swaim, the investigator, traveled to Port Lavaca, Texas, L-A-V-A-C-A.
Okay.
Port Lavaca. With a group of 100 volunteers to search under local bridges after a tip came in saying the girls' bodies had been dumped in the area. The only problem is the city had previously been searched by investigators.
Okay.
Because they had heard other tips of the same thing. At that point, they uncovered nothing, and the same was true when Swaim went to go search it as well. In August of that year, a 28-year-old man was making a string of obscene phone calls in the area.
Oh, jeez.
So they're like, okay.
Get a hobby, dude.
Yeah, so I don't know. This guy's calling and saying sexual things to girls. They're like, gross. Maybe, you know, this might be somebody that would take three girls. You know, who knows? Let's investigate him.
Well, I mean, you could look at the sexual predator database, too.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Those
and
are all...
let's hope they did do that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Say, were you at the mall that day?
Right. Yeah, I believe they would. I mean, I never looked into that
specific
thing.
Okay, but regardless, we're looking at this 28-year-old guy that's being perverted on the phone.
Yep, the same guy was working at a local store where Rachel had applied to work at one point.
Okay.
So there were some connections, and he also lived in the same neighborhood as Rachel.
Okay, so clearly he could have easily been at the mall.
Right. And unfortunately, Nothing with the missing trio happened. But after investigating him, they found he'd been using this position at the store to collect information from young women. And a total of 6 female applicants reported receiving crude phone calls from him. So
he was getting their phone numbers on their applications and calling them specifically.
Yeah, and then calling them being like, oh, baby. Ugh.
Oh, it's so gross.
Can you imagine like if somebody called your daughter and like just started saying bad stuff?
No.
Oh, man, I'd want to find him right away and put an end to him. But unfortunately, again, nothing happened. Like, all these stories are just going to be like, well, there was this lead, nothing happened. Well, there's this lead, nothing happened. It's just, like, so frustrating.
It is. It's disheartening.
I mean, imagine being the family in these situations.
No, I can't. I can't imagine.
In 1976, 3 skeletons were found in a field.
Oh, my.
In Brazoria County, Texas, by an oil drilling crew. Swaim had the remains checked against x-rays and dental records, but they turned out to belong to a male and 2 females.
Okay. Were they ever identified?
No, that's the other thing.
To at least solve some
maybe.
Crime?
I don't know. It wasn't this one. So I looked into it and like there was a lot of, like, there's tons of information about this trio. Uh-huh. And it's just like, yeah, it's so many different directions that it's, yeah, if you include this trio in there, it gives you information about this. So, yeah, so eventually all these different things he was looking for, this psychic, nothing ever came out. Eventually Swaim died in 1979.
Okay.
Of an apparent suicide.
Oh my.
Yeah, and
the word apparent makes me wonder.
Right. If he was off somehow.
Well, because he could be leading investigators to the answer, and we don't want him to do that.
Yeah. And then get this. Upon his death, he requested all his records be destroyed. Which kind of seems not like totally honest.
Yeah, why would you want that?
I don't know. So I mean, who did he have something to do with it?
Who knows? It could have been that he was killed and it was just written, I want all my records destroyed.
That's true. And written out to Thomas H. Trelica or whatever. Yeah, so all the things were contained so we never know if any of the files contain any legitimate information about the case. Through the course of the search, the families involved had to deal with prank phone calls also. Can you imagine
being
such a piece of shit that you'd prank phone call?
What is wrong with people?
It's...
It blows my mind to think that somebody would get joy out of another family's absolute torture.
Right, right. It's just, like, sickening. I can't imagine to be the kind that'd be like, oh, you know what? Why don't we call the families tonight and pretend that we're the girls or something, or that we have the girls?
That's so sick and twisted.
Yeah, so they had to deal with that crap. Renee's parents had to buy another phone line because random people kept calling and claiming to be their missing daughter.
That's really sad.
Like, just some people really suck sometimes. It is
disappointing that the human race could be so vicious.
Right, like these are fellow humans and you're doing this, like knowing they're in their like worst times. In 1999, Rachel's brother Rusty, so he seemed to be the one that kind of really pushed a lot of these searches and things. He was 11 when they went missing.
Okay.
But Rachel's brother, Rusty, contacted private investigator. I'm going to say private investigator.
So Rachel's brother was 11 when they went missing. And this is what year?
1999.
Oh.
So way after.
Oh, wow.
So he's just like obsessed with trying to find his sister.
Well, of course.
Like,
what happened to her?
Yeah, he missed out on everything.
Goes Christmas shopping, never to return. And that's end of story.
Yeah, probably looked up to her and everything.
That's horrible.
Yeah. So he contacted another private investigator, Dan James, to help further the investigation. They looked into several witness sightings of Rachel and Renee at stores and a gas station in the days following their disappearances, and additional reports that Rachel had been seen in Fort Worth area during the Christmas seasons. So some people might be like, hey, I think I saw somebody that looked like Rachel. Because they put up pictures, even advanced pictures,
sure,
of saying what they might look like. You know how they do that. Like,
sure.
You know, they're 50 now. Here's what they would look like. And people, and it's constantly talked about in Fort Worth. Like, people, like, you go to Fort Worth and mention it, everybody knows
about it. Because it's such a mystery.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, it's not just one person that went missing, it's 3.
Yep.
In a very busy shopping mall.
Yeah, and just, like, unbelievable. Like, and everybody's like, maybe I know. Yeah, maybe I can crack something.
Well, especially if you were there that day, you would think, like, maybe I saw something.
Yep. So, both Rusty and Dan James, they think that Renee and Julie are deceased.
Really?
Yeah. But they cite the recent witness sightings as evidence Rachel is likely still alive.
Really?
Yeah.
Which, why would she be spared?
They think someone or some people are keeping her away from her family, and they just refuse to share any evidence that they have to support that claim. So they have something that they think that for, but they're not really sharing.
Interesting.
Because I guess they don't want it to get out and possibly find, get out to these people that they're on to them or something. In December 1999, James offered a $25,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the people responsible for the girls' disappearances. And he's also one of the sponsors of a website that's no longer up. Like, it just went down recently, missingtrio.com. So don't even go there. But okay. When it was active, it had updated information about what's the latest in the case and everything. And he actually has a Facebook site now. So if you look at the Fort Worth Trio on Facebook, there's a group you can join and try to find them. Now, he offered the money from his own savings and said he's never received any compensation for any of the work he's put into the investigation.
Uh-huh.
So he's just somebody that's interested in finding the right people.
Sure.
And be like, all right, you know, this is something.
Right.
So this investigator, James, he said he's received death threats from anonymous callers warning him to remove himself from the investigation.
Okay.
Which is weird.
Right, because like, if you had nothing to do with it, why would you possibly do that? Unless it was the whole thing like the prank calls.
But then why would you like kind of indict yourself or, you know, be looked at? Yeah, right. And then let's say there's an off chance that your DNA was somewhere or something and all of a sudden you're in jail.
Why would you possibly want to insert yourself in something you have nothing to do with?
I mean, I guess the brightest people aren't probably doing this, but...
No.
Yeah, but maybe he was getting close. Who knows? The case was officially reopened by investigators in January 2001, so I guess it was closed for a while. A few months later, in April, they held a press conference where they shared they'd interviewed at least 20 new witnesses who'd seen the girls at the mall on the afternoon of December 23rd, 1974.
Like, where were these people?
I don't know.
For the past how many years?
A lot. So 2001 to 1974, 27 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. They also shared that they narrowed down the possible suspect list to just 5 individuals.
Wow. So that was 2001.
Yeah.
Well, now we're in 2022. Where are we now?
Well, the same month, the former Fort Worth policeman and security guard at the Sears outlet approached a news station with information regarding the case. He claimed to have seen 3 girls and a young male security guard inside a pickup truck at about 11:30 on the evening of the disappearances. The girls appeared relaxed and were in the vehicle willingly, laughing and exchanging words before the security guard drove them away with the truck. When they left, the youngest girl was sitting next to the driver, the second oldest was in the middle, and the oldest was next to the passenger side door. So he like saw them and they were just like giggling, and
which you can't imagine why they would be giggling and relaxed at 11:30 p.m. when they were supposed to be home at 4 p.m.
Right.
Like, why wouldn't they be stressed?
Right.
Because she had Rachel had a party to go to.
Yeah, and they're with this little girl, too.
You said you were taking this 9-year-old to the mall and that you were going to be responsible. Her mom said, I'd like you home by 4. You know, would it be like her to just be giggling in the back of a truck at 11:30 p.m.?
Yeah, like, it doesn't really add up.
No.
Right. So...
Especially if you're a responsible person.
Yep.
If I told somebody I would have a 9-year-old home at 4 p.m., I certainly wouldn't be laughing in the backseat of a car, you know,
no.
7 hours later.
Right, unless you're just a complete idiot.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Just a flaky person. Flaky,
right. And I guess some
And there are definitely
teenagers.
People, and again, teenagers, like you say, that you could say, oh, I could totally see them doing it. It like, depends on their personality.
Maybe
if it was
they
me,
think
they would say no.
Maybe they think the security guard's cute and whatever, and they want to be like, oh, let's go have some fun. Don't
you
worry.
You know, but the
fine.
One was married and the other was 9. And then we're dealing with a 14-year-old.
Right.
So it seems like odd logistics.
Yeah, it doesn't really add up. So according to the witness, he contacted police just a few days after word spread of the girls' disappearances, but investigators failed to follow up with his information. Until 2001.
I'm thoroughly confused, especially because you're like, they were desperate. They were looking in every avenue.
Well,
but
the family
was. Not...
Right?
Oh, okay.
So these
okay.
people contacted the police, and the police did nothing.
That's amazing.
Right. Amazingly
Amazingly
terrible.
Horrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's mind-boggling to me how you wouldn't follow up on that.
So and it just seems like it reeks of botched like police work, basically.
But left, right, and center.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, we forgot to process the car or whatever. No, you're like deliberately not looking into leads.
Right. Almost like somebody purposely
well,
like
you
pushed
wonder
it to the side.
Why.
Yeah. When approached by the media, investigators said they located the security guard seen with the girls, but that he denied they were in his vehicle that evening. So they said that they found him and they asked him, but nobody really knows for sure.
Why would he say, yeah, I had him.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe they never even talked to the guy. Who knows?
Who knows?
Over the years, the families had to deal with a bunch of claims that their bodies had been located. Unfortunately, none of the claims were right. Investigators also searched through state medical records in New Mexico for unidentified females, but no luck. They have their dentals and DNA available in case they ever find remains. In September 2018, Rusty, with the help of Texas Equisearch, some group, organized an effort to raise two submerged cars out of Benbrook Lake.
Okay.
Which is a nearby lake. It was believed the cars were connected to the case.
How did they find the cars?
I'll tell you. So a GoFundMe campaign was set up to pay for divers from North Texas Marine Salvage and the equipment needed for the job. So why'd he want to search the lake? They found out there was a guy who lived 5 miles from the mall.
Okay.
And his vehicle went missing in the mid-70s. So they're thinking, okay, this guy didn't have a car anymore. It went missing.
Where is it?
Right. Like, where would he put it? So they looked around and found that there was cars in this lake.
So how did they know this guy's car went missing?
They're, again, desperate and just looking for any possible, like, okay, well, this guy had a car. It's unreported that he hasn't checked it back in to, you know, whatever.
And they were getting this information via some sort of reports?
Yeah, and just looking through, or just, like, looking through records. And
okay,
things,
DMV so records. Just really anything that could possibly be tied.
Like, anything, like, they just need one lead that'll get them.
Absolutely.
You know? So the lake is, in, you know, for, of course, GoFundMe was involved, so they put together a nice story, and people are like, yeah, I want to be part of this.
Everyone wants to solve this.
Yeah, they just want closure.
Yeah, absolutely.
At this point, you know, and it's so hard to get. So, yeah, the guy lived 5 miles from the mall, and the lake is about 8 miles from the shopping center. But investigators didn't believe there to be enough evidence to warrant a search, which spurred Rusty to organize his own search effort.
Okay.
So obviously, no surprise, the investigators didn't think it was worth it. So
my goodness, it's like they've just written it off
like
from the get go.
Hundreds of thousands on this, basically. The first car was pulled on September 22nd, 2018, and the second one on October 13th, 2018. 5 scientists were brought in to analyze them, but neither determined to be related to the case. Their VIN numbers were collected in case they're connected to the other unsolved cases in the area, but nothing came up.
Isn't that
up.
Crazy? There's just like cars in a lake.
Yeah. And there was another one in there too, but it was just so broken down that they couldn't even pull it out. I guess it was really sharp and they just didn't want to risk it. So Crime Stoppers issued $1,000 reward for information leading to the resolution of the case. So there's tons of reward money out there. And just like looking for something.
It's so hard though as the years go by.
Yep. And Rusty once received a call from a young woman claiming to be Julie. She contacted him over skepticism over her upbringing. Like she basically... You know, she was brought up and being like, I don't think these are my parents. And then she saw a picture of who she thought was Julie in the paper. And she's like, that kind of looks like me. Like, am I this child?
At 9 years old, I'm confused.
Well, you know, maybe you know how like some memories are fuzzy back then. And
but
people
at nine, Reese is 10. Our daughter is 10.
Yeah.
Like if two people took her and said, we're your mom and dad.
Right.
She'd be like, no, you're not.
Right. But if, I don't know, like, you know how the, whatever, like groupthink, you know how that works? Like you're with the same people over and over for long enough? No.
No.
Like you had that story about what's her name? They ended up beating that girl down.
Yeah. And I get that you can start to believe things, but not who your mom and dad is.
Yeah. I don't know. So maybe she just.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's possible. I'm certainly not a psychologist.
Right.
So
she saw a picture of Julie online and tracked down Rusty. After seeing her picture, both he and Julie's mother thought it was possible she was a missing girl.
Oh my gosh.
But a DNA test came back negative.
Damn it.
Yep. According to investigators, the last time they had a lead was in 2001 when they collected DNA evidence. Due to the active nature of the investigation, the results have not been shared with the public. It's their belief the girls left the shopping center with someone they trusted and met with foul play.
That's what I'm thinking, that they calmly walked out with somebody they trusted, hence nobody recognizing anything amiss, because it's one thing to grab one 9-year-old, but to get a 17-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 9-year-old out to a vehicle or wherever without showing signs is pretty impossible.
Yep.
So I have a feeling it was definitely somebody they knew. So then the next question is, obviously everybody who knew the family and these girls were extensively interviewed,
yes.
Correct?
Yep.
Where were you December 23rd at blah, blah, blah time?
Yep, and they all had, you know, decent stories. All the men and the relationships and everything, they were all investigated. How well? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if we can trust this force very much. Maybe we can, maybe we can't. Nothing. We don't know.
Well, the proof is in the pudding.
Yep.
And the pudding is rancid.
One last piece of the story here that kind of pisses me off, which kind of gives you an indication of how this whole thing went. Not a lot of details were given out about the investigation, which frustrated the families.
Of course.
So you need that communication.
100%. These families are suffering.
But at the same time, you don't want to... you know, forego the case in case you're onto somebody.
Yeah,
you know?
I get that, but at least say something.
Yep. Richard Wilson claims that he's been lied to about potential searches in the case.
Like, hey, we're searching, and then they didn't?
Correct.
Not cool.
In one story, he said he'd been told by officers that they're going to look into a lead that the trio's bodies were at the bottoms of a well in Aledo, Texas.
Okay.
So Richard's like, you know what? I'm going to follow him.
I want to see that this is happening.
So Richard decided to follow the officers. But he,
like, unbeknownst to them?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
So he found they only went to a Paris coffee shop on the near south side.
Oh, my gosh.
Before they returned to the station and called the family to say nothing had been found.
What?
Yeah. That, now, that's just a story that it was in a magazine by Richard Wilson. So I don't know how accurate or whatever, but you got to take him for what he says.
Oh, my gosh. I am livid.
Absolutely.
So how could you do my question is why?
Right.
Are you lazy or does somebody you work with is involved in this?
And also at that point, you'd be like, you go to the news, like go to every single station and be like, I just followed these and then try to get them in another one.
See, yeah. I just can't wrap my head around why it wasn't investigated more.
Maybe just some lazy, you know, police.
You know,
work,
and it could be, or there could be something a little bit more sinister, a lot more sinister going on.
Like somebody
one of their
up.
Own.
Right. And they don't want to
is involved.
Get in trouble.
And right. I've heard plenty of true crime podcasts like that.
Have
it was
you?
Somebody in the police force that was involved, and we just don't look.
That thin blue line doesn't want to be crossed.
It's, yeah, and it's really hard to believe that these things happen. But sadly, there's a lot of corruption.
You know, a good cop when they've turned in other cops for being bad cops.
You know, and
you can't just keep quiet.
Being
quiet is staying complicit in their badness
and letting it happen.
Yes. So you have to report. If you're a cop, you got to report bad cops.
Yeah. And you know, I know there was the whole debacle about, you know, the police and this and that. There's plenty of good policemen.
Yeah. Most. Yeah.
Most. It's the bad apples that, you know, give the bad. Yeah. Exactly. The bad rap.
Yep. So thousands of leads have been investigated, dozens of searches, and, you know, combing through Texas, all over the place, and, you know,
nothing.
So this is the same situation.
So not only do we not know who took them, where they took them, there's no bodies, just nothing.
Yep.
Nothing.
Currently, all three cases are classified as non-family abductions. If they're alive, Renee would be 62. Rachel, 65, and Julie, 58.
So tragic for these families to just never know where their children got to. And there's so many cases like this. And, you know, obviously, I've done the case of Aisha Degree, where she went missing. But at least they had two eyewitnesses that saw her walking down the road. What happened after there, you know, it's a mystery, but at least they know that she left the house and she was heading in this direction. In this case, they just poof, vanish.
Right. Like
into
no solid
thin air
anywhere.
And nothing.
So frustrating. So at least like you can't blame anybody even. It's just like,
I mean, somebody is responsible for this.
Right.
Somebody did something to them.
Right. And so I'm going to post.
Who we don't know, but, you know, they're out there.
If you were near Fort Worth, you know somebody that was, I'm going to post all the information and on our show notes and everything. So yeah,
missing stories are just very frustrating.
It is super frustrating, and I'm sorry. I know it's like, man, I want a good ending to this here.
You know, but, and you can't even imagine if we're frustrated, you know, wrap your head around what those the family members must be going
we're
through.
We're about 1/100th of what they're feeling.
Especially when you don't feel like due justice was done in terms of the search.
Yeah, and then you start pointing fingers too,
and
you're
that,
like, just desperate.
That doubly makes it worse because you feel like no one's helping you.
Right.
And that your daughters were just forgotten.
Yep, out there somewhere wishing that they had you and stuff.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, so in there, I know there's been some recent ones that have been solved, like after 40 years or something.
Well,
so
sure, because DNA technology and all the, you know, stuff changes. But the problem is that I hear in a lot of stories is that the evidence wasn't maintained well. Oh, there was a flood there. Oh, there was a fire there. Oh, it disappeared. It's gone. It's not there anymore.
Yeah, it's hard to keep every single evidence of every single case
ever. It is.
Something this big, you would think.
Something, yeah.
Yeah, so it's sad.
Yeah.
Well, if you know anything about it, then, you know, please, you know, let somebody know. We'll post in the show notes. But hey, thank you so much for listening. I even wore my shirt that I got some grease on earlier, and I covered it up with my pillow, so I'm feeling pretty good about that.
You couldn't even take it to upon yourself to change, could you?
Well, I wore some khakis here. I look very professional, I'd
Senator
say.
Business.
Senator Business. I put my gym shorts off and pulled on some khakis, and as soon as this is done, I'm going to pull them back off and put on the gym shorts. So it'll be fun.
Yeah. But hey, anyway, thank you so much for being here, and until next time when I'm up, we'll be back.
Right.
Okay.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. Like, nobody wants to do that. All right. Now, for real. Bye.
Bye.